Greetings and welcome to St. Dominic's Weekly. This is Father Michael. This week we continue with our Meet the Novices series, as we are doing this summer. And Brother David Wu is our guest today. Brother David comes from Southern California and has a very wonderful vocation story. Some of the things we get into is his own Korean background, the fact that he was accepted into the Air Force and then pivoted into the Dominican novitiate. Talks about how this novice year has been a year of growth and discernment, particularly talking about just wearing even the habit and how by wearing the habit, you're indistinguishable from a priest himself and how he's been able to relate and interact with folks in ministry. It's a very harrowing experience that he relates towards the end of the podcast, almost a near-death experience he had while walking the Camino de Santiago in Spain. So just a wonderful, wide-ranging conversation, and I hope you enjoy. And so whether you're on the go or taking it slow, many, many blessings as you enjoy today's show. Greetings. Welcome to St. Dominic's Weekly. This is Father Michael. I am so excited to introduce another novice. We're in the process of Meet the Novices, and I have a very fabulous novice with me today, Brother David Wu.
Hi. How's it going, everybody?
It's good. Good to have you today on the show. So, Brother David, now I've been asking folks here and there about religious names. Your baptismal name is David.
That is correct.
So what was that? So interesting, a number of the other novices that I've talked to talked about intentional moments of taking a religious name. For you, you chose your baptismal name. Maybe say why, I hate to put it negatively, why didn't you change, or why did you in a sense reaffirm your baptismal name? What went into that process?
Right. Well, it's interesting, I guess, the way we take our religious names, we actually give our novice master and eventually provincial three names, and it's up to them, kind of up the spirits, to decide what the name will be.
Well, let me stop you right there, because I was talking to this with another of your classmates, and that's a little bit of a change since I did it, because when I was there, it was just like you proposed and they either said yes or no or did it. But I know the older tradition, there is an older tradition that gives three names, but do you express a preference of one, two, or three?
I think we put them in an order,
okay,
and then the novice master expects, kind of gets a feel for,
okay,
so is the novice kind of leaning towards one way or another?
Gotcha. Okay, so you actually don't know until it's actually said.
That's correct.
Really? So even you had a little, like, moment of I don't say trepidation, but of wonderment at that
exactly.
moment.
Exactly. Trepidation, excitement.
Excitement, yeah. I was kind of like, oh, which one would you? So you put in order. But you put other. Did you have other names that you were considering?
Not yes and no. I had. It was all variations of David. It was either David, David Elijah, or David Mary.
Oh, okay.
But what's interesting is that I think I was kind of leaning towards David Mary or David Maria.
Uh huh.
And then I proposed that, and then it's only after the fact I realized just how important obedience is. Just kind of my first lesson is obedience, because in our class, four of the eight novices have Mary or some variation thereof in their name.
In your name, yeah.
And to have a fifth Mary in that mix would be a lot. Okay, so I realized, oh, okay. So there is a bigger picture that I don't see that I need to be accepting of.
That's interesting, because, I mean, certainly there is a tradition. Sometimes people say, well, you know, you've got male religious taking variations of Mary's name seems a little bit odd. Mm-hmm. But there is a tradition of taking a middle, if you will, kind of a middle name, if you will, dedicated to our Blessed Mother. I've also heard that just to be a Dominican, there already is a kind of implication that certainly we're connected to Our Lady, even if it's not formally in our name in that way.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we wear the rosary every day.
Yeah. So. Exactly.
We wear it, we pray it, we preach it, so.
No, for sure. So, it's not as if even if we don't say the Maria. And sometimes folks have that religious name, but in common usage, people won't always use the variation on Mary. So Brother David, Elijah, though, what was the Elijah? Is there some kind of connection with Elijah?
Well, one of my friends before I entered was kind of, he and another friend were just thinking about potential religious names for myself.
Yeah.
And then he just was relating the conversation to me later, and he said, David Elijah just sounded great.
Really? Okay.
And I hadn't really known or read Elijah in the Book of Kings before, so after hearing that conversation related to me, I looked it up, and then at the end of the day, I thought, what the heck does Elijah have to do with me? Am I going to be assumed in clouds? What am I, this great prophet? And so I just tossed it in there just because, well, someone said it might be a good name.
Okay. But I love how you're open to, like, well, I'll just kind of try this on and see. So, but no, Elijah. I just wondered if there was something more there. So maybe a little bit about kind of where you're from. How do you got to be wearing white?
You're from Southern California.
Yes, I'm from Southern California. Yep. Born and raised in a town of Cerritos.
Okay.
It's kind of right on the border of LA County, Orange County.
Okay.
And then I went to school at UC San Diego, mm-hmm. and then that's where I met the Dominicans when we still had the Newman Center down there.
Okay.
And as I like to consider Father John Paul as one of my very good friends.
Nice. Okay. And he was at the Newman Center there.
He was the pastor and director of the Newman Center while I was there.
Yeah, so what attracted you to him, the religious life? And this? Cause it's one thing to be at a Newman, like it's a college campus ministry.
Right.
But what about that interaction really kind of said, I'm thinking more about the Dominicans.
Well, I think he was really the first religious or the first priest who really enjoyed and loved what he did and was able to show that to people. Because myself, I grew up in going to an ethnic parish, so Korean-American community, but I grew up going to Korean masses. And so even though I speak Korean, liturgical Korean was a little bit out of range for me, so I wasn't really able to associate with that. So when I got to college, and then things happened where I was able to get to that stage of I want to devote my life to God more and be involved in a church. And then Father John Paul was kind of the first people to show me, so this is what the church is about. There's so much life, so much vibrancy, so much that's going on here.
Yeah.
It's not just prayers being said every week. No, there's so much more. It is the reason why we're here.
Nice. And you grew up Catholic then, as a Korean American.
Right.
Your last name is Woo. I don't know if I said that. Woo. Not for great radio. It's like I always said that sense of a cultural identity. Did you ever get made fun of because of your last name? Woo?
Not particularly.
Not really? Okay.
No. Oh, yeah. Although the joke was, I hated the joke was people would say Woo.
Mm-hmm.
And then although I hated that in high school, now I've kind of adopted it. And then I guess that's one of my trademark just sounds I make around the priory.
Really? That's where it comes from? When it was like when there's something good, you're like Woo.
Right. Right. I guess I'm a naturally excitable person.
You are a naturally excitable person. I can go ahead and confirm that for you. But I didn't know. So you kind of leaned into the Woo as you've gotten older.
I have, definitely.
Okay, very good. And so you have siblings?
I do. I have two younger sisters.
So you're the oldest?
I am.
That is not surprising me.
From one oldest sibling to another.
Exactly. Exactly. So obviously born and raised Catholic, but then saw, at least in college, had a deeper dimension of kind of living the faith rather than just kind of going through the motions, but just seen as kind of either a cultural religious kind of aspect to your life. It's like, wow, here's a priest who's actually excited about what he's doing, about, you know, living the faith and sharing the faith.
It also helped that he preached really well.
Okay, yeah. No, he's a fantastic preacher for sure. Hopefully as Dominicans, we at least aspire to doing that. And so through his connection, that's where you kind of got interested in the order?
That's my main connection, right?
Oh, your main connection. Okay. So then did you, in terms of kind of knowing anything about St. Dominic, the history of the order, any of that kind of thing was...
I actually knew none of it, right.
Okay, yeah.
Complete blank slate coming in.
Really? Okay. So how's that? So just describe. So obviously some of your classmates have had definite formation around the history of the order, different Dominican saints. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to ask you about your experience this year, really coming in, having the experience of a Dominican friar particularly, but not necessarily any of the historical, theological, or even spiritual traditions that have come in. How's this novitiate been? What have you learned? What is really kind of been striking to you in this year?
The whole year has just been a huge learning experience.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, one of the reasons why I'm here is because on one of my come and sees last year. So I actually came on my second come and see.
Yeah.
My first come and see. Sorry.
And just say what a come and see is, for the benefit of.
For a come and see is a weekend generally at St. Albert's where vocations candidates come and. Yeah. Spend the weekend with the brothers, so praying with the brothers at both liturgy hours as well as adoration.
And anyone can do this. You sign up for
male,
the weekend. Male, sure. And any male thinking to be a Dominican religious can sign up and be part of a weekend experience. Okay,
right.
Go for it.
And then my first come and see was actually under Father Stephen Maekawa when he was the vocation director. That would be 2013.
Yeah, and people here at St. Dominic's would remember him certainly fondly he was prior here for a while, and then he was certainly on staff too at a vicar now up in Alaska. So he was your first, reaching out and connection on Come and See.
Right, and I went to a Come and See under him, and then basically radio silence or not much interaction until last year.
Oh, okay, but you were still studying. Were you still in college?
I graduated in 2014. So okay. when I met Father Stephen Maikawa, I was still in college.
Okay, in college. Okay. Because normally you have to have a college degree in order to get. But so you kind of made a connection. There was, as you say, radio silence for a little bit. and then what kind of clicked the radio back on? What got the frequency back connected?
Eventually I realized, what am I waiting for?
Mm.
And I think I'm a planner. I love to plan, and I love planning all these grand adventures, these schemes.
Yeah.
I even like planning out my day. Nice. What am I going to do at this hour?
Are you a high J on the, have you done Myers-Briggs kind of stuff?
I don't think I'm as high of a J as some of my classmates, but I'm up there.
Okay, you're up there. Okay. No, there's definitely, I guess in some ways you can compare, but J on the scale.
Right, for sure.
Okay, so planning. Okay, so go ahead.
And then it was a lot of planning, but not a lot of acting on it.
Gotcha.
So one, I guess during that waiting period, I had actually applied and intended to join the Air Force.
Oh, okay.
And as an officer candidate, and although I'd been accepted, there were some logistical hangups on that. So over about the course of 2 years, I wasn't in the service. I was just kind of in this weird limbo state with the Air Force, where they said, "Oh, we need to send you to training, but there's no slots, so we'll just keep waiting." And so over the 2 year period, I realized, what am I waiting for?
Mm.
And so finally, in January of 2018, I just said, "Nah, I'm gonna pull the trigger. I'm gonna do what I've always wanted to do."
Really?
Which is Dominicans. I was able to be honest with myself, just move forward with that.
Wow. And so at that point, what do you think had kept you from, as you say, kind of going forward?
I think I had this desire of maybe I need to get some real life experience, put my time in the military, mm-hmm. get some adventures, mm-hmm. kind of get it all out there before I enter religious life.
Okay. And then there's a sense of, okay, what am I, in a sense that kind of dream, or at least plan of like, I just kind of want to live life to the fullest and then enter into the order. Was like, no, living life to the fullest means entering the order.
Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting. And so then you came on another Come and See with Father Steve Maria. Is that right? Okay. And then of course.
And then entered. 3 months later, and 3 months later, I was in. So
yeah, no, I remember. So what? And interesting in terms of going back to the kind of what you've learned as being kind of a more of a blank slate. Are there what kind of stands out in terms of like something about the history of the order or the spirituality of the order, or how the reality of how it's mm-hmm. kind of lived? What are some observations that you've had from this year?
The lived experience is definitely something new.
Yeah.
You catch glimpses of it if you come to the Come and See.
Yeah.
And even on personal visits here, but there's definitely something different about being on the other side
of
I guess, the grill, the grill as would be for the cloister.
Putting on the habit changes everything.
Right.
Donning the white
is I don't necessarily feel any different, but the fact that it puts me in a wholly different perspective.
Yeah.
And so that has been a learning experience for me.
How's your family been with it?
So my parents are very supportive.
Okay, are they? Okay.
They're actually almost... That was one of my fears, actually, about telling them I wanted to join religious life, because I know they were supportive.
Oh.
So I wanted to make sure that this was a neutral decision, or as unbiased a decision as it could be.
Gotcha. And so what was the fear, that you'd enter and then if it didn't work out, they would be disappointed, or...?
No, the fear why I kind of kept my parents in the dark for a long time was I was scared that their approval or their, because they're, I guess, in the Korean Catholic community, there is still a huge respect towards priests.
Sure.
And so it's a great thing if your son becomes a priest.
Okay.
And so I didn't want that additional pressure on me while I was discerning.
I see what you're saying. So by telling them, they might have said, "Oh yeah, do this, right. And then it would be more of a...
Well, they told me that even before I said anything anyway.
Oh, really? What did they say?
In junior college, they were like, "Have you thought about being a priest? We make you really happy. We think that's where you need to be."
Really? Okay.
And so I kept consistently shutting them down.
Oh.
So over a couple of years, then finally... They thought I'd given up, and so they gave up. And then when I sprang the news on them, they were in utter shock.
I'll bet, but obviously delighted. Okay, so that the sense then, you just, it felt like it would have been a little bit of a nudge, a little bit too overt nudging if you would have kind of kind of confided in them at an earlier mm-hmm. stage. So and that might be this too, maybe looking back on it, why you really wanted to kind of discern and, as you say, kind of live the adventure of life, and then enter kind of what was the sticking point.
Test the vocation,
test it as you go. What about your siblings? Are they younger, obviously, but But what do they think of having an older brother to be donning the white?
They're supportive, uh-huh. but at the same time, they don't really understand. I think my little sister is probably the most understanding, the most supportive of it. But even then, she's caught up in her own college drama.
Okay.
So she's busy with her life.
Okay. No, but it's. I think family certainly is a way and an insight into how we relate, even in community, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that sense there. Good. So other things you've learned. So you, in terms of kind of the kind of family dimension, if you will, of Dominican life, any other things that have emerged for you during this year?
Definitely that we're all called to love each other, uh-huh. but not necessarily like each other.
Okay.
That has been a big lesson for
has
me.
It? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Without giving particular examples, maybe. Or, hey, you know, breaking news here, right here on the thing. What does that event look like for you?
Well, just at the end of the day, so no matter what happens during the day, at the end of the day, we're all here for the same purpose.
That's right.
Right. Preaching for the salvation of souls, yep. living in community,
That's
being
right.
Christ to each other.
Yes.
And so, although we might get ticked off, annoyed at each other, get into disagreements, that's okay.
Yeah.
And being okay with that, because tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah.
And not going to sleep on that, but just letting that pass and mm-hmm. just kind of being able to learn to let that go. That's been a fun experience.
Nice. And your class is a little bit, it's actually the biggest class, numbers-wise, since I think I was talking to Father Isaiah, since his class, or at least proximate to
the
his metrics, class.
The number was like 16 years or something like that.
Yeah, which is scary to me because it means I remember those days. That means I've been in the order for 20 years now. So it's like, oh yeah, 20 years ago. I'm like, oh yeah, that was when I said. Mm. So that's how long it's been. But so having 10 and now 8 in the class. Mm-hmm. Certainly, there the opportunity both for joys and for strife and sorrow is more ample.
Is rife.
Is rife. Is rife. Exactly. I like that good word. Rife. Rife for opportunity. Do you tend to find that living so in such close proximity kind of, I don't say not exacerbates, but magnifies both the kind of bonding and the potential stress?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100% agree.
Okay.
One of my novice brothers made the observation. So we as novices go on our southern tour every year.
Yeah. Say a little bit about. So just describe the tour mm-hmm. and then unpack that.
So the tour, we break it up into two parts, and we look at our different ministry sites all across the Western United States, which is the Western Province, which is where we minister. Mm-hmm. And so we break it up southern and north. We go to the south when it's cold. Mm-hmm. So in the winter, so we're not in the blazing heat during July.
Yeah.
And
the north in the summer.
And the north in the summer, exactly. Yeah. So it's when it's nicer up there.
And this is visiting all of the sites that our Dominican brothers do ministry at, either living proximate to them or finding spaces to basically connect with them and just having them show the ministry.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So we're on this trip, and it's about a month-long trip?
A month-long trip.
Okay.
Right.
Per tour. So you're on the southern tour. You're visiting L.A. and Arizona.
L.A., Tucson, Las Vegas, Mexicali. Yeah, it was a great time.
Utah in the... Or you
we did not.
North? Okay, so that's in the north. Utah's north, I guess.
So it depends on where it falls. But unfortunately, or unfortunately, depending who's listening, we will be going to Alaska for the northern tour. And as a result, we're going to have to... due to the timing of it, we're going to have to actually cut out.
Oh, so you're not going to Utah?
Lake,
oh,
correct.
Interesting.
Not this year.
Not this year. Okay, so you're going to Alaska.
We are.
Wow. So, but anyway, you're back on the side. I don't want to miss. You're going on the southern tour, and a novice brother said something that was.
He said the tour just magnifies everyone's experience,
that's
everyone's
right.
personality.
It's true. It's so funny. It was I traveled with a classmate, a novice classmate of mine. It wasn't during the novitiate. It was after that when we went from Washington. We'd studied in Washington, D.C. for a year, and we actually came back. We drove across the country together. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that one of the Dominican priests said when we got back is, are you guys still talking to each other? Because when you travel, when you're in a road trip, it makes all the difference. I had one time there was a couple who was like, I don't know if we should, in terms of our vocation and compatibility. And as I said, have you ever traveled together, right? And certainly you get separate rooms and all the rest, but But if you travel together, you will quickly.
It's a great litmus test for sure.
Yes, it's a great litmus test for sure. So you've traveled together as the band of brothers.
We have.
Nice. What about your own kind of spiritual life? How is that either changed, deepened, matured? Like how do you think the Lord's been leading you during this kind of privileged, honestly, time of novitiate experience?
It's definitely deepened it. I'm definitely more aware of when I don't have my, I guess. So one of the practices for this novitiate year is that we have generally a holy hour every day. So we spend an hour in front of the Blessed Sacrament.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. I'm glad for the structures that have that to that are in place for us to be able to keep faithful to that. Because it's a lot, for me, a lot harder personally to just kind of get the motivation to just do that.
Yeah.
And so having that has been very, very nice, wonderful.
Yeah.
And I miss it when we don't have that. Even on one day when something comes up, when we have some sort of outing or a dinner and we're just not able to schedule that in and we don't have it, I feel that more.
Interesting. So. And is that surprising to you? Would you thought that wouldn't be something that naturally
it
would
is.
Miss?
Yeah. It is actually very surprising because I'm very much, I prefer to be active and on the move, doing a lot of things.
Yes, you do. We recently did a little retreat and Brother David was just bouncing off the walls looking for things to do, which when you're preparing a meal is great because he's the ultimate. Oh, you're amazing at being helpful. But so I could see how being more contemplative and a sense of just kind of quiet reflection might be more challenging. But you're finding that it's actually very rich for you.
Right.
How would you describe that? Because obviously you're naturally an extrovert. You're on the J scale. Like what's the experience of kind of slowing down? What does that kind of do to you and for you?
Well, one of the questions that I always keep thinking of in the holy hour is, who am I? What am I here for? It's just kind of wrestling with the existential questions of life.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, the answer that I've come to realize is that I am a child of God. And being able to just reflect on that more and more. It's not about what I can do. It's not about what I've done or who I know, what I can do. No, it's being kind of still in that moment and kind of embracing that truth of this is who I am. God loves me and I love God. Yeah. And kind of being in that moment.
Yeah.
Because I tend to forget that's one of the first things that goes out the window when I start getting active again, unfortunately.
Yeah. But it gives a purpose to all the activity,
right.
I'll bet.
Right.
Right. So it's because I know, you know, talking sometimes you'll talk to folks and they'll be very, very successful in terms of, especially here in San Francisco. I think it's the, I just saw something that said San Francisco has the most billionaires per capita in any city in the world, period, right
now.
Wow. It's like for every, you know, whatever it is, every 1,100 people, there's one billionaire, which is just a staggering proportion. So it's a very, so obviously you're meeting lots of people who are successful by, you know, secular measures of success. And yet, you know, in private confidential moments, they'll kind of relate to you that, you know, for all the business and success and entrepreneurial kind of gifts that they have, there can be a little bit of drift when it comes to the why questions of life.
Right.
Like, why am I here? What's it all mean? As you say, who am I? What's the meaning of all this?
Right.
And to be able to connect with that each and every day for an hour before our Lord who created us certainly is a way to kind of to kind of refocus all that we do, right? I think of the scripture that says, if the Lord doesn't build the house, in vain do the builders labor.
So, exactly.
So no, that's you know, I think coming into religious life, I know even for myself, all the little busyness that I get up to during the day, it can be a challenge to just be faithful to the structures which help us to take that time to once again reconnect and so that the Lord speak to our hearts in that way. So the contemplative aspect of that.
Right.
No, beautiful. Any other thoughts in terms of things that are striking or people might not know, or you yourself have been surprised by living with eight guys in such an intense kind of intentional experience?
Well, on a more practical note, I'm realizing just how easy it is to get the habit dirty. And oh. The habit is not as clean as people think it to be.
That's interesting. It's funny you say that because certainly we have a laundry machine downstairs. Right. And so everyone, you know, obviously gets a tutorial on how to wash clothes right. for some of our younger members and for others how to get out different stains. And there's mm-hmm. a kind of tradition of how to shout it out or, mm-hmm. or to remove stains.
Literally shout it out.
I always thought we could do an advertisement for Shout, you know? We can make some money
by corporate sponsorship.
Yes, I mean a corporate sponsorship where they just we don't look friendly. We just like provide all of our communities with it with a stain remover, and we'll shoot a light-hearted but fun commercial for them, shouting it out. But you've got you know what I find is actually well two things. Number one, I remember when I got a really prodigious stain one time, and I was just like, oh my goodness, and they always happen right after you wash it,
right.
So you always get it stained literally within 24 hours of having
it. And then
just
no stain for the next 2 weeks.
Exactly. And then you're like, okay, well, maybe I'll just you know, kind of invert, as you say, invert and multiply. So you can switch the, if you stain your scapular, you just turn it inside out and hope to get away with it. Invert and multiply. It's like both works for fractions and for scapulars. But so the 24 hour window. But I had one friar tell me one that there's a reason why, you know, when he wasn't concerned with a stain that he got once. And he says, well, because it's not a costume. Mm. It's our clothing, right? Mm. So you don't, if you stay in a costume, right, mm-hmm. you're all worried about it because, you know, this doesn't fit with the, you know, whatever character.
It's not the look, right?
Exactly. You've lost the kind of the pristine look or the fashion, right? But if it's clothing, we all know clothing gets dirty. Right. It's just a natural expectation. So I remember it was a funny thing to say when he got a little stain and I'm like, oh, a stain. He's like, it's not costume, it's clothing, you know. So it was a nice line that I didn't forget. But white actually is like, if it was, you know, so I take this because we have, I think, the Cadillac of habits. So you've got mm-hmm. the kappa, which is the outer cloak, which is black, mm-hmm. and then of course you've got the habit, which mm-hmm. is white. And I find even though we wear it less often, because it's black, or at least that darker shade, stains will show up more readily on the kappa than on the white, because white actually does a good job, a better job than I would have thought of camouflaging stains than the dark, because dark actually shows more than white. And that's something I wouldn't have thought of mm-hmm. until the past 20 years I've actually worn white. Pretty much. And the reason is if I'm not in my habit for every reason, I usually wear darker clothes, mm-hmm. right?
So I see.
And naturally priests will wear like a black, you know, like the black collar or something.
Like clerics, right?
Clerics, right? So that actually is harder to keep pristine than it is white. So there's actually, practically speaking, white is the best color to not show stains. So even Dominic was there. And of course it's our habit because mm-hmm. it's the cheapest, but so undyed wool and garment was right. the cheapest. So that's why it's our habit just traditionally, historically. Mm-hmm. But another side benefit to the habit that I found,
stains really well.
Is it actually camouflages stains. Exactly. It's so you don't have to wash it as often. So there, although appropriately, we definitely do have good washing practices. But maybe back to that sense of kind of other things that they, so you got the habit. Was it interesting relating to people with the habit? So in other words, what I found for my own novice year is, what, 2 weeks we do a postulancy, so it's kind of like you've got this intense, I use the analogy of like, you know, concentrated juice, you know, where you kind of like, you know, if you've ever taken a scoop of concentrated orange juice, it's like, oh my goodness, or lime or something, it puckers you up because it's a concentrate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's like postulancy is 2 weeks of intense kind of like throw you in the boot camp kind of thing,
right?
After which you get the habit. So obviously ages is going to give you a little tip, but it just from outward appearances, you wearing the white habit and me wearing the white habit, who's the priest and who's the guy who's not even in vows yet, you can't really tell, right? And I remember feeling surprised about how people related to me once I was wearing the habit, and I had no bat, like I was just, you know, kind of fresh into the novitiate year. Did you have a similar experience or a sense of how other people relating to people as you're kind of forming the habit and getting comfortable with that?
I don't think I've really noticed it too much, just as a general rule. But mm-hmm. every so often it'll strike me because someone will just refer to me as father.
Mm, yeah, sure.
Offhandedly, just maybe someone I don't really know well, someone I maybe meeting for the first time, just father. And usually I'll correct them, say no, I'm just a brother.
Yeah,
and which requires a little bit more catechesis. But or explanation, right?
Yeah.
But then I guess it does, your thing of earlier, the priests and the brothers, they all wear the same thing. And
yeah.
So that's also been interesting.
Yeah,
that's
no.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because you have a sense that the fraternity is deeper than, you know, our ministry is what we're called to do. And called
right.
to be, but our religious life is who we're called to be, right?
At
a deep level. Have you had anyone ask you to bless things?
Not yet.
Really?
Thankfully.
Oh, nice. Okay. I kind of have expected people to, you know, with your outgoing personality, to be wanting to bless. Someone sees someone in a white habit, they want a blessing for particular medals or sacramentals. But just stay tuned. You'll get it. I remember the first time someone came up to me as a brother and asked if I could hear their confession. And I was, first of all, I was stunned. And then I realized that they thought I was not wanting to, like I was reticent for some other reason, not because I wasn't able to, but I didn't. So, well, no, I am not a priest, is what I ended up saying.
Right.
And, right. Actually one time someone did that, they didn't actually care. So ended up, they wanted to tell me that. So I ended up just like, okay. And then we prayed and had a moment of asking God for forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I made it very clear 9 million times that I was like, I'm not a priest. But it's just, it's interesting how relating to people, once you wear the habit, it helps you, I think, in a sense of like, who am I? Like those questions you were asking, who am I? What's this all about? Mm-hmm. Putting on the habit actually helps to give you a sense of identity. This is who I am called to be in that way, for that kind of thing. So nice. So as you look forward in kind of Dominican life, what kind of animates you, gives you a sense of excitement to be a Dominican?
I just think
of ministry and future Dominican life.
Well, the fact that the order is international.
Yes.
That you can go anywhere in the world.
Well, yep.
Yeah. No, anywhere in the world, really.
Yeah.
And that there will be a house there with plenty of work to do.
Yep.
A lot of people who haven't heard the message of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Let's get out there and do it. So
nice.
That's kind of the exciting parts.
Even missionary kind of things you're interested in, maybe?
Right.
Okay.
I think I'm interested. I don't really know what that entails, but...
No, that's a good answer, because who knows if you haven't done it. And you speak Korean, you said?
I do.
Yeah.
Not as fluently as I would like to.
Okay.
But, definitely a work. Definitely something that I would like to get better at, but I can hold my own.
You know, and liturgically, you'd be okay. Like... As a priest,
you would need practice,
but you'd follow, you'd clue in and connect back in.
Right.
Do you see yourself doing a kind of ministry in the kind of ethnically Korean church, or is that an interest or not?
It's an interest, and I would be open to it, but whether that's what the province needs or what the order needs is a different issue.
Exactly, so. For sure. Yeah, no, there's always a kind of a confluence of availability and ability. So we have the ability, we have our talents, but then what's available and what's needed is there. But certainly for mission work, going out and preaching the gospel is very much. I mean, I think of Dominic. This is not great radio, but Brother David has a little goatee going. He's got a little facial hair going right now, and I'm personally digging it. I'm never going to want to be gainsaying, you know, encouraging the brothers to explore facial hair. But as you may know, historically, priests were clean shaven, and that was a cultural expectation, certainly in Europe. But Dominic had a beard, and he had a beard because, as you may know, he wanted to be the only people who were allowed to wear beards were missionaries. Because the idea was, since you were traveling, you wouldn't necessarily have all the requisite, you know, gear to taking, so you could be clean shaven in every way, right? So shaving implies that there's a certain stability, and you've got, you know, razors and stuff like that. But if you're on the road, so it was allowed for missionaries to grow beard. So if you were at least in the Roman Church, if you had a beard, it meant that you were a missionary. Well, Dominic wanted to be. He wanted to go to Jerusalem, to the Holy Land, ultimately to the Far East, to Russia. And so he was allowed then to grow his beard in anticipation of being a missionary. He never got further than Rome,
right?
And ultimately founding the province. But that beard was that sign of mission. So I see a little missionary goatee going. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm trying. That's what I'm hinting at.
Whatever God wills. Whatever God wills.
Very good. So, fun fact. This is the segment of the podcast where I've been asking all of the novices and your brothers something about you that perhaps not well known or is kind of would be interesting to know.
Well, anyone who's been on it would know, but Buen Camino, to anyone who's walked the Camino Santiago. And I walked Camino Santiago in about August of 2013.
Oh, wow. So just after you, was it before or after the Come and See, the original Come and See? You went on a Come and See, you mentioned around that time.
I think it was a little bit before.
Okay.
From that, I'm not quite sure about the chronology, but it was around that time.
So just describe, well, what's the Camino for people?
So the Camino Santiago is an ancient pilgrimage route that wanders along northern Spain, starting in the town of Saint Jean in France, ending in the city of Santiago, where the relics of Saint James are held at the Cathedral of Santiago.
And it's across the Pyrenees, is it right? Across the mountain range there. How many miles roughly is it?
So the 760 kilometers, which is about close to 500 miles or so.
Okay, so about 500. So it's a several week. If you do the whole thing, you're looking at several weeks kind of thing. And so did you do the full experience?
I did.
You did the full thing.
I did.
And did you go by yourself or did you go with?
I went by myself. And what's nice about the Camino is that even though you go by yourself, you will never be alone.
Okay.
So both spiritually and physically.
That's like a life lesson.
Amen. Amen. The Camino is actually just a model of life.
Is so. It? Say more about that. That's interesting.
So there's a lot. So what's interesting about the Camino is that because it's the very nature of it is social, especially in the summer when there's a lot of people going on it. And you'll meet people from all walks of life. People who are doing it for fun, for health, something they've been wanting to do for decades, something that they've been working on for decades. Uh-huh. So you'll meet people from all walks of life.
Yeah.
And then you'll inevitably form little groups and little cliques of people. Some people you'll walk with for a couple of days, and then they'll just disband. And then a couple of days, maybe you'll see them again, maybe you'll form a new group, and then maybe they'll disband. But it's kind of the very fluid nature of human community.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the kind of interesting things to me, because people, you share this very intense experience with walking with for a couple of days, and then it just kind of naturally falls apart, and no harm, no foul.
Yeah,
and then
you
see each other again. There's this whole excitement all over again, and then it goes away again. Looking forward to the next step, the next step.
Nice. And so it's kind of like in terms of like you meet people for a moment, you share that experience, and then life takes you, as the road does, to a different stage of that journey.
Right.
Nice. So it's almost like religious life.
Amen.
So you did the Camino, all 500 approximate miles of it.
I did.
Nice.
I did.
Did you any particular stories that stand out from the Camino that kind of remain with you maybe 6 years? It's been 6 years or so, 6 years later that...
Well, I'm going to say I almost died, I think, twice.
Okay. That would be a memorable moment. So give me one of those. You almost, like, are you being facetious or you mean...
No, I think one of the times I think zealous is an accurate word for what I like to do.
Oh, yes.
So on one of the days, there's different options, I guess, on the Camino, like day-to-day between towns and between cities.
Uh-huh.
And there's one section of it called the Camino de Dragonte, which I refer to as the Dragon Way. I'm not really sure what the Dragonte means.
Yeah.
But it goes up and down three mountains, about 500, 600 meter climb.
Elevations?
Oh, climb, and climb, ascent and decline.
Oh my gosh.
And so I thought, this is going to be fun. It's not going to be on a road with a bunch of cards. It's going to be in the backcountry with a path surrounded by nature and God's beauty. Yeah. I'm going to love it.
Yeah.
And so I started. And about noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm partially up the second mountain. And I realized I'm out of water. It's hot. There has been no one in front of me or behind me
for
the past couple hours.
Uh-oh.
And I'm not even sure if I'm on the right path.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I think I lay down in the... I think I get to somewhere where I think is shady, and I kind of put my pack down, and I just kind of think, I'm just going to rest here and just close my eyes. I'm just going to rest and see what happens. And then I probably could have died at that point, but something just kind of said, go.
From just dehydration.
Dehydration, heat exhaustion, all that kind of perfect storm of just being irresponsible.
Oh my goodness.
Overexertion being one of them as well.
Yeah. And so what happened?
And so the little voice just said, go, it's not your time.
Really?
So I said, fine. I didn't really know who it was. And I'm at this point, I know it's God.
Yeah.
But I just said, fine. And then I just kept going. And not even a mile later, there was a town with a water fountain, running water.
Oh my gosh.
And so...
Wow. So did you know that you were, people speak about, you know, being aware, even not perfectly consciously, but subconsciously, like it, let's just kind of slip into the, you know, with, I think of like, even like coal, like hypothermia and things like that. Were you aware that your heat exhaustion was, drifting you into unsustainability?
I think that that thought came to me after the fact.
Okay, sure. Okay, 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 okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, so I wasn't really thinking about dying, but yeah. I pretty much could, if I'd actually just committed to just not moving, then I probably would have just...
You would have just...
Expired.
Expired. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
And that was one of the experiences?
And that was one of the experiences.
Was that the first one or the second one?
That was the first one.
Well, so that, so I hesitate to ask, but what after that near brush with death, then what'd you get up to?
So the Camino Dragonte section of it was about halfway through my Camino.
Okay, okay.
So the second experience is when I'm walking. So I've reached the city of Santiago after 33 days.
Okay.
And then I had a couple days before I had to get to Madrid to fly out. And I figured, well, there's this whole Finnish Tere thing, which is like at the end of the earth where pilgrims would also go, which is literally the end of the road because it goes right to the ocean.
Okay.
Because there's no more road at that point. And so I thought that'd be fun. It's 90 kilometers. I can sprint it in 2 days.
90 kilometers. That's just a little, little,
just a little, little
summer stroll. Right. Yeah, a little summer stroll. All right.
And so the first, and so I'd been on the Camino for 32 days.
Yeah.
And then the next morning I thought, well, I got to get moving again. I don't want to, I did my goal. Now
yeah,
what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I decided to go to finish there. And the first, and I was just assuming 45 kilometers per day. So yep. 45.
2 days, 45. 45. Okay, yeah.
I did not make the 45 days. 45 kilometers on the first day. Okay. I got about 35.
Okay.
And then I just, it was getting dark and I was tired. I thought, okay, you know, I'll just start earlier and I'll walk even faster tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness. So this is a pattern in life. When you don't do it, just do more the next day. I see where this is coming from. Okay.
So again, zealous is the word.
Overzealous. Okay. Knowing your limits.
Yeah.
So was it another heat exhaust? Oh, but there's a lot of people on that road, no? They go to the... Because
that,
that's
on
very
that
famous.
Road.
On right. that road, that's kind of famous because that's mm-hmm. kind of a signature at the end mm-hmm. of the road. So was it exhaustion again or was it... What was it?
This was exhaustion. I think this would be literally... So people refer to a wall. There's a certain somewhere. There's just a wall that you'll hit.
Yeah.
And then I hit that wall and I just... I just barely passed one of the hostels and hostels to sleep at, and I'd gone maybe about 300 yards, and I thought I can't. I literally can't. So, and at that point, I was literally limping along.
Oh my goodness!
Because I was in so much pain.
Okay, just in terms of soreness or general soreness, or did you twist anything or
no?
Or
I think it was just anything? Soreness and exhaustion.
Okay,
it was multiple things. And I thought maybe I was dehydrated. No.
Yeah.
I thought maybe I needed more food. That wasn't it because I ate and I drank.
Yeah.
And I still was just feeling just not able to move as quickly. And
your
as
body
I
was
wanted.
Just shutting down after 33 days of mental and physical exhaustion. Oh my goodness.
So I get to the albergue of the hostel and then I check and say, and then the guy looks at me, instantly is able to diagnose this guy looked like he's about to collapse. I'm just going to do what I can for him, and then just let him be.
Okay.
And so I pay my share, which is like pay myself for the night, which is about 5 euros or so. I get to my bed, so to speak, take off my clothes, and go into the shower, and then I turn on the water, and I just sit on the shower stall floor, water running for about 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Just totally spent.
Yeah.
And somehow I'm able to crawl out of there, groaning the whole time.
Oh, wow.
To my bed.
Yeah.
And this is at like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah,
I put myself in a sleeping bag, put a quilt over me.
Yeah,
and then put a cap on.
Oh yeah,
and then I'm toasty, and I'm for the next 12 hours I'm shivering and sleeping.
Oh my goodness,
it was great.
Oh. It was great. We've got a different definition of great, but it was restorative anyway.
It was.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
Needless to say, I got up the next morning and I walked the last 15 kilometers too.
Oh, so you finished it out, and you made the flight.
And I did.
You must have. Yeah, you drove or took a vehicle back to Madrid.
So I did. So I was able to. Funnily enough, I also met Father Lukasz, who is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, who's one of the friars in our Western province for now. Well,
for now,
he will be going back to Poland.
In Salt Lake City, before mentioned. Wow. And you meant was he a Dominican at that time?
He was.
Okay.
He was leading his own group of pilgrims from Seattle, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, yeah. Right. Nice. So you ran into him.
I ran into him. And then I also happened to drink some bad water on the way to Finisterre. So I was also having those complications.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was able to buy the last train ticket with a private bathroom.
Okay.
Which I very much utilized and enjoyed.
All the way to Madrid.
On a sleeper car all the way to Madrid.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow. Well, so there you go. So
God provides. Yeah. Deus pro videbit is so real.
So you were ready for the novitiate. The novitiate's been a breeze.
Relatively speaking. Relatively speaking.
Very good. Well, Brother David, thanks for that. That is a capital fun fact. Capital fun fact. So I hope you've enjoyed our time together. And for all of your listeners, certainly may the Lord continue to bless you as you radiate the joy of the gospel here in the heart of the city. Amen.
Amen.